This episode of To The Last Drop is sponsored by the Listen Audio app, where you can stream all your favorite radio stations, catch up on the latest news and entertainment, and dive into captivating podcasts all in one app.
That's download Listen, that's L-I-S-T-N, from the App Store or Google Play. The Listen Audio app, everywhere you are.
It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Carme and Brendan Nell.
Welcome to The Last Drop. I'm Liam Del Carme, and with me, as per usual, is Brendan Nell. Today, we have another special guest, somebody who needs very little introduction, recently announced retirement, although I suspect it's retirement not the way we think of it, but, you know, he's just taken a step back. I think he'll still be involved. Jakob Paper, welcome to our show.
Thanks, Liam. Thanks, Brendan. Nice to be here.
Yeah, I was going to say we won't get a red card for this one, but we're gonna pepper Yaku with a couple of questions. We don't often get referees talking openly, or being allowed to talk openly, I should say, and I think that's quite a pity. So I think the more we hear from refs, it's the better. Yaku, let's start with your last game, the World Cup. That must have been an incredible disappointment for you, getting injured like that. I mean, you were hoping for a semi, I'm sure, I suppose with the Springboks that day, you wouldn't have got the final, but at least the semi-final would have been great.
Yeah, it's definitely a disappointment, and besides that, it's an embarrassment, you know, to walk off a rugby field injured. It's not as different when players get injured, they get subbed, and, you know, it's a natural movement, but when a referee or an official gets taken off a match in halfway, it's quite embarrassing, but it was a huge disappointment. You've worked a long time to get there, and like you said, at that point, obviously we hoped that the Springboks would make the final, but you didn't know for sure. They were playing France the next day, the host, probably the tournament favourites at that point. So at that point, we were working towards a final or to the best possible appointment. So it was a pretty big disappointment. However, I've been blessed over a long period and over a long career where I had appointments in large and big matches and test match series like Lions series and, you know, final game days in Six Nations more than 3-4 times. So I had that privilege. So it is a disappointment, but I'm still, as I sit back and look at it all, I'm still just so grateful that rugby's been so good to me.
Jaco, I recall bumping into you at Gare du Nord train station. You had, I think, visited the Springboks practice earlier that day, and the disappointment on your face was palpable. You know, you obviously knew by then that you were not going to be involved deep into the tournament. But how long did it take you to recover from that injury?
It's actually taken quite a bit of time, because as I recovered and tried to get back into training, then I had another setback. So it's the same injury reoccurred. So it was not just a calf, it's that Achilles heel. So I don't have medical terms, but there was a bit more damage than suspected. And it comes a long way. At the beginning of the season, I had a fractured foot after Australia, at the start of France in November. So that's November 22. I had a fractured foot. So I was out 6 weeks on the same legs, you know, same leg. So obviously, this must have had an impact. So as you come back, had a bit of a niggle on the Achilles and up the back of the lower leg, and that all just inflamed. And then I obviously pushed it too far, and then it had a tear. And my friends say it's not possible. So it was a 9-centimeter tear, but my friends in my leg, my calves are not even 8 centimeters, so it can't be.
This is beginning to sound like a Jean de Villiers interview at World Cups.
Yeah, Jean, captain, has had a few unfortunate injuries at World Cups, hasn't he? It's luckily my first injury at World Cup, but yeah, as you get older, I think the body starts to tell you a few things.
Jaco, you've had some interesting World Cups as well. I mean, the previous one, you paid a pretty heavy price for stopping to take a photo with a fan. And I don't know if anyone remembers that one, the Welsh and the French, and you'd given a red card, and suddenly, which was to the rest of us a moment of a bit of banter, turned into quite a storm around you at that stage.
Yeah, that's the ball of rugby. Perception and a snapshot in time. There's no context to that photo, what happened in the 10 minutes leading up to that, you know. So it was actually quite a few French fans at that identified us. We just got back from the stadium and we walked through the near the fan village. And a lot of fans stopped us and they had a good time with us. They took photos with us. And the French guys, obviously these guys have been on the beers since the morning and now it's just early evening. So they had a fantastic day and they're having fun. And you had the French fans who took the photos and they all took these photos with me. I didn't take photos. You know, I just stood there. And then these Welsh lads, they saw that. We probably took about 30 photos there, maybe even more. With all of us that was in that match day team, and and there was one lad. He's clearly had enough, more than enough to drink, and he was constantly giving me one of these. You know, so he was like, you know what people are like when they had a few beers. He was niggling me, and just as I thought all the photos was taken, I gave him one back, you know, and that's the photo that the world saw. So it was a silly moment, but can I blame anyone else? No, I can't. So what I've learned from that is I've got to control that environment. If you take the responsibility of being a referee or any of those limelight roles, then you've got to be able to control those environments or maybe prevent getting into those environments. So there was nothing sinister. It was a few moments of laughter by everyone, and it was taken out of context. And yeah, obviously, it had repercussions.
The reason why I ask that is because I actually wanted to lead into maybe a more deeper point. Is this last World Cup and before this last World Cup, the last couple of years, we've had a number of discussions around referees and social media and things that go on and what fans do. And so the target referees and that sort of thing. It almost feels to me that the whole environment around referees is so, so serious. And I mean, you and I have had discussions like this on the odd occasion when we bump into each other, but it feels like you guys are in such a bubble that you can't talk out. You almost feels like you don't get protective. And in the meantime, you've got this outside bubble of the public who are just targeting you. So that's why I say in a moment like that to me, which was actually a fun moment, which I think 99% of people probably would have taken the right way. It was almost like a pretext for where we've got to now, where fans just, unfortunately, with social media, just go overboard. And I feel sorry for referees because you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Yeah, look, that is the problem with rugby. Everybody wants to blame someone when they lose, so it's easiest, to not blame our team or ourselves and blame the referee. And so that's why referees go into that bubble, because one misstep, one step out of context, then you get blamed. So that's why referees seem very media shy. And that's why referees seem to have a lot of privacy around what we do and the seriousness that you perceive. But inside our bubble, where we live, we really have good times. Rugby really provides good times for referees. And just this World Cup again, we had a massive good team spirit, and we stayed in a hotel together for, what was it, 8 weeks, 9 weeks. And it's lads that knows each other for a long time, so good mates, you know each other's families. But we are very careful because we know how quickly that gets dragged out of context. And that's unfortunately the way the world works at this point. So I think what often happens is when someone meets a Yaku or a Wayne or whoever, let's say a Ben O'Keefe, then I often hear the comment, he's actually a good oak. He's actually a nice bloke. He's mild. He makes a joke, He's actually a fun-loving guy. Because they only perceive what they see is on television, where you've got to be serious and straight-faced, and seem balanced, really balanced and controlled and calm. So I think once the lads actually get to know the real Yaku, Wayne, Ben, whoever it is, they just realize we're just normal dudes that love rugby. We're actually the ultimate fans. That's why we're prepared to take the, battering. And it's a privilege to be on that field so close to the best players in the world, so close to that action in the middle of those crowds. So we're actually just normal people having a hell of a time on the rugby field and trying to be as fair as we can.
Yaku, do you think, given where the game is at and the sort of noise around referees, and you mentioned it now, you guys have to be in a bubble and sort of almost be protected. Do you think the environment that has been created Is it conducive for attracting new people to that fraternity? Is it more difficult to get referees given the way things are?
I think at the moment they're struggling to get new aspiring referees or ex-players to turn into referees because of the negatively geared environment. I do think, I don't have the answer exactly how, but I do think it could be built better. Referees could be sold to the world better.
Yeah.
If they allow us to, or not allow us, if they present us to the world and send us out to the media so the people actually get to know us, I think there'll be a different perception. That also brings risk. And at this point, that also brings risk. So I don't have the best answer, but I know for a fact that we have to start telling the good stories, not just the stories where people are threatened and their families are threatened on social media and all that stuff. I can tell you a million stories. It's really good stories. Stories that I've got mates that's got money, but they can't buy these moments. You know, I've got mates that got a lot of money. They just can't get into those venues with the teams and the players, you know, where we have those Six Nations post-match black tie dinners in the most extraordinary, event halls and so on. And the last one in France was in L'Opéra. I mean, that opera house, it's unbelievable. You would never be able to get inside that place on your own unless you are some sort of dignitary. But we get in there. That's all those extras that you get into being a referee in this world. I met the Queen. I met the Queen in 2015 in the Buckingham Palace, in the ballroom. These are the good stories that we have to tell to attract referees. Because there's a lot of focus on the negative stuff and the errors, but we don't make more errors than the players. Ours are highlighted because it's easy. It's easy to, you know, because when I drop the ball, I don't have a teammate behind me that scoop up the ball and then make the pass and then we still score. That's the difference. Our errors stop the game more. So I just feel there's a lot of focus on the negative stuff, and the negative stuff is a small part. There's so many good things. I enjoyed my time with rugby thoroughly.
I take your point about presenting a sort of a different face to referees and maybe World Rugby should make that effort, because it's, I suppose, from a fan's perspective, and when I say fans, I put that in inverted commas as well. When you on social media and you want to abuse somebody, I suppose it's a lot easier if your perception of that person is it's just a robot, it's not a person that I can relate to or engage with. That's a very good point you make about putting you guys in a different light, I suppose, or in a better light publicly.
And look, I've been to Australia and New Zealand more than 100 times. I don't know many jobs that take your business class to Australia and New Zealand more than 100 times. And we go to some fantastic places like the Coogee Beaches and Bondi Beaches and Gold Coast and Queenstown in New Zealand. And, you know, so, yeah, there's a lot of hard work, but there's so many good things. And I think if aspiring referees or retiring players who can become referees know all these good things, then they'll have a different perception on all of that, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to reference a story in 2015. Another ref, not from South Africa, who I know quite well and you know quite well as well. And I saw on his Facebook feed when I was working that you guys did a camp with the SAS, I think it was. So like almost like a boot camp. But it looked like a hell of a lot of fun with the photos. And to me, it was just great seeing the refs in a different environment, seeing them laughing, joking. And so we published one of them, one or two of the photos. And there was a huge outcry. And the poor ref really got into trouble for it, which I thought was just so unnecessary. And yeah, sometimes I just feel, we get to speak to you guys off the record. We see you guys away from the field. And we tend to know that, but I think World Rugby can do a whole lot more in just humanizing you guys, and I think that's one of the shortcomings. And I don't know if there's any scope in the future, because as you say, now it keeps on going on the negative, and referees do need to be protected, but there should be a happy medium somewhere.
And to be fair, SA Rugby makes the same mistake. I mean, you don't even bother asking for an interview with the referee because you'll get turned down.
Well, I actually want to say, Jaco, another little anecdote, which you'll probably enjoy. I remember there was a Lions-Bulls game, talking about just probably 10, 12 years ago at least, when Vili Roos was still refereeing. And there was some very typical game. There was some crucial decision that went against the Bulls and they went for the Lions. And we asked for the ref. We thought, well, let's give it a try. And next thing, Vili came up and Marius was still with him. Marius was still very young in the refing ranks there. I think he was one of the ARs. And they came up with their laptops. And they made fools of us at the press conference because they had all the replays and we were ready to grill them. And they had all the replays ready to show us how wrong they were. So, yeah, that to me was always just something I always remember as a reminder of how the emotion in the moment tends to make you think one thing. But if you sit down there with cold, hard facts, you actually see the other side of the story. And I think that's something that never really gets told for referees.
Yeah, and look, I think SA Rugby have considered. They've been pioneers. They've actually been the one union that at one point had, when Paul Dobson and the referee attend the post-match, you know, for an interview like the one you've referenced. But then there's other risk to it. Sometimes if you send an inexperienced referee, referees his second Curry Cup game out there and you've got all these experienced journalists sitting there, they're going to hang him out to dry, you know. So if he says the wrong thing, maybe when you get older, you know, a bit better, you can navigate your way through there. But it's always a risk sending someone out there. But I think we should. But then the guys need to be prepared and trained, just like players. They get training on how to deal with media. We need to train the referees how to deal with media, how to deal with certain things. So it's not going to happen overnight. But I think the future, if we want to humanize, as you guys said, the referee, then that'll be one of the things that could be done. But there's also, we had an initiative, and you guys will soon know about this. There's a documentary that they started making around about Six Nations, and they followed some of us through the year and all our referee workshops and camps. So there'll be a documentary out on Netflix, I believe, soon.
Yeah.
Which followed us for a long period. And it's obviously only going to be 130 minutes or 120 minutes, but there's a lot of insight into the inside of the world and how good a team spirit we had at this World Cup and how good the good mates we had and families in there. My girls joined and then Wayne Barnes' family joined and then, you know, Paul Williams' family joined and then how they come in and out of that environment. So I think that'll already go a long way to just show the people. These guys are good guys, man. They're not cheats. They make mistakes. No more than the players. We can go a long way to actually show that the referees are human.
Yeah, you make a good point about demystifying the world of referees. There's no doubt that there's a need for that.
You're with Brendan Nell and Liam Delcom on the To The Last Drop podcast.
Do you have a favorite team to referee in terms of not just your rapport with the players, but also, you know, sort of flow of the game and the sort of quality of game that you're able to put out there?
They're not one specific team or country, but it's always good to referee a team that's had success for a while because they seem to deal with referees better, you know, because they've had a good run. They don't feel like they are, you know, referees are always against them, that sort of thing, because they've had a good success run. So it might have been the All Blacks at some point, and then it's Ireland, and then maybe it's France and so on. I never had the chance to referee the Springboks, but bloody good, because that's my team. Good luck to the others if I referee them. Anyway, no, just a joke. But I guess successful teams over time, and that doesn't mean they never lose when you referee them. It just means they're organized and they've got leaders that know how to engage with the referee and it's effective. If you need change on the field, they have systems to actually comply again and make that behavior change. So often, it's just often a team that's got a good, you know, good few wins behind their belt and confidence is probably teams that's easier to work with. But it's not one specific team, no.
Yeah, I was going to say also, you know, some referees have obviously made their name with little quirks and little sayings like it's not soccer and things like that. You were never one of those guys. You were quite serious on the field a lot of the time. What any good moments you remember if you think back some favorites?
Yeah, I've had some really good times on a rugby field. maybe I at least I smiled, you know, so you could see I enjoy it. But for me, I feel like my role, my position on the field is I'm a servant of the game, and the rock stars are the players, so they should get the limelights and the quotes and those sort of things. But I remember one specific day, I think it was Bull Sharks in a Curry Cup final. We had the halfback of the Sharks. He was really, might have been Jaden Hendricks in his first year. He was really cocky, and, you know, he was giving it to the older blokes like Dwayne from Mielen and guys that I've been refereeing for 10, 12 years. And I just thought to myself, hang on, this is going to turn ugly. These guys are going to upend you soon, and it's going to be my problem. And he kept going and kept going. I turned around to him and I said, mate, this is your first Curry Cup final. You've got a lot of advice from old oaks over here. So just keep quiet, man. And then that went, I was unlike me, but it made the headlines.
There was also a particular climax to that game involving him.
Yeah. So that's not my trademark. I've had one or two moments. I remember John de Villiers running over me in 2011, I think it was, Storm of Sharks in Newlands. And Stormers had this move. They short line out to the back, off the top, hit the middle field with Francho Low, if I remember correct. Then they always come back blind. And then they play someone like Dwayne or someone, could have been Moskal Berger, someone with Kudan. Then he turns around and they play behind his back, kind of move with backs all crossing there and trying to create some confusion. But this, so I know my place is on the inside. I just got to protect myself being there. And this was the first week in 20 weeks without the variation where someone, John de Villiers, was running this blind angle in the inside. And when Dwayne threw that ball, I saw that ball coming to me and I could hear the footsteps coming from the back. and the Springbok captain smashed me, but he ran over me. I didn't have the whole bold spot patched by then, but you could see my bald spot just developing there. You could see the bottom of my boots. Then you could see my bald spot and bottom of my boots roll three times. And my whistle got stuck in the turf of Newlands. So I tried to jump up and stop the game, and I kept playing. I couldn't blow the whistle because it was full of clay. And eventually they stopped. They stopped, and Yanni Duplessis, I remember from the Sharks, helped me up. And John de Villiers was still on the floor, and I then helped him up. And I asked him, John, are you okay? You know, kind of as if I hit him. And that's one of the few moments where it was a good laugh. It was a good laugh. And then the next day, we just come from World Under 20 tournament, World Cup Under 20s. And we all opened Facebook accounts for ourselves there, all the lads. So I put on my, I think, I don't have it because of this story anymore. And then the next day at the airport in Cape Town, I put on my, because my mates were giving me, you know, shit like mad because I got run over like that. And I put on my, I think it's you call it your wall or something, and I put in my status there. So good news for the Springbok team, the South African captain has just been released from hospital after the massive beat by Jakob Paper on him. And obviously a lot of banter, and my mates got stuck in, and the next day someone quoted that in the newspaper. They always say who said what on Twitter or Facebook, and I got called into a disciplinary by SA Rugby because I was disrespectful to the typical referees gone. And then I just deleted that Facebook account, and I've never ever had social media ever again, because I knew I'm just set up, because if I do something, it'll be something like that for fun, and then it will be again out of context, and I'll pay the price. So I took my medicine and deleted my Facebook account.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Huh?
Have you opened any new accounts in the last week or so?
Not yet.
TikTok, here he comes.
Yeah, TikTok dancing reps. Yes, interesting.
I do have. I think
that's calling time on TikTok.
On my phone, because I got young girls, so they want to be. I have a Snapchat, you know, account, so they use all my data, but you will never see me on there. They probably do it on my name somewhere in the world.
Yeah, you probably have to give us an idea of what you're up to now, and what do you intend doing? Because as I said earlier, I mean, retirement is, you know, that's just a word. So yeah, what are you going to be up to?
Yeah, I think you picked up well in it. It's a good time to step away or step back from the game. I don't think I'm done with rugby. I'm rugby born and bred, blood. It's in my blood. I grew up next to a rugby field with a dad that played and coached. So I love rugby. So whatever way it is, whether I coach under 16 team at Grey College or school in Bloemfontein, where I live, or whether I look after two referees, you know, that we're trying to get up to the world rugby stage, there'll be something. I've got a few options, but I said I'm going to give myself a few, yeah, just a month or two, just to get that space between rugby and just give myself a month or two off, and then I'll decide. I'll always be available for SA Rugby if they want me to consult with some of the referees and or with the teams. But in Maine, I have a business. I've been involved in Nashua as an office automation supplier since 2014. So I've always in the background run my business. I've taken the major step recently of buying up my partners. So I'm in control of the business. So that all aligned with the retirement. So, you know, it gives you more context. So the retirement is not just the injury. The injury is one part of it, but I could always fight back from the injury. It's not a problem. But if you bring the business and the family, my girls are growing up, 11-year-old and a 7-year-old. So if I need a dad, I can't be overseas for 6 or 5 months of the year. Just get to that time where my wife needs more support. She's been great. You know, golf, she deserves a medal for all the time. She had to wipe all the tears and, you know, sort out all the stuff and with the dad overseas, and I have to, you know, the fun over there. So, yeah, it's just good timing for me to step away. But I can't see myself staying away from this game. I just love it too much.
I was going to say, you're
it's actually funny. Often when one is away from home, where things, and especially when it's a longish tour, where things go pear-shaped at home, there's always a geyser that bursts or a swimming pool that floods, and then you are obviously thousands of kilometers away.
It never happens when you're alone. When you touch down at Heathrow. It's normally when you touch down in Heathrow and you switch on your data.
Your phone goes like,
bam, bam.
I was going to say, you probably need that month or two, your wife and your kids, just to get used to you again, because they're not used to you being
reintroduce yourself.
Yeah, look, I'm suspecting they like it now. That it'll be a couple of weeks or 3 or 4 weeks, and then they'll tell me, get out of this place again. There's too much rules here now. So why don't you just get to go again?
I was going to say, on the refing side, I was going to ask you, I mean, obviously one of the things, you came in at almost the back end of almost the golden generation for South African referees with the Andre Watson, Jonathan Kaplan, Mark Lawrence, Topper, all those guys. And since then, I mean, if you look now, almost the dominant faction in refereeing is the English refs at the moment. So, it doesn't seem like South Africa has too many refs coming through as such. I don't know. You've been in the inside. Do you see that changing, or do you see more? Is it more a fault of the environment at the moment that referees? Obviously, it's tough to recruit referees.
Oh, look, the fact that England's now got a lot of referees, the Premiership has a really good plan to look after the referees, and they contracted about 11 or 12 referees. And that's what they just in that cycle now where those guys have become seniors. Before that, it was France. So France had 4 referees at the previous World Cup. We're supposed to fight back and get him back in there. Do we have the talent and do we have the knowledge of the referee? I think we do. I think we've got some incredible young referees like Mornay Ferraro, who's coming through now. We've got a different call, but you can name them. There's Christopher Allison. I'm speaking about the guys who haven't done the Super Rugby's or the URCs that really come into the fold now. Can they become the test referees that we want? Yes, I think so. I think with the right support and, a referee have to look after himself a lot of the times, but if they still need that setup, but they still need that some person that leads them through the first few storms, you know, to navigate them through those storms so they stay up straight and not, you know, start knee-jerking, etc. So I think we have the right guys. I know Maurice Jonker for a fact is going to get involved in coaching as well in referees. So we've got, if myself and Maurice maybe play a role there, we've got the right people that can help them, but it doesn't happen overnight, and fans get upset or impatient. So if a young referee, the risk is if you put a young referee in and he makes a few mistakes, then people want out of there and fire and find his match fee and et cetera, et cetera. So sometimes it takes too long to get that referee there because we want to limit the risk and see that he's ready. But I was lucky. Mark Lawrence broke his nose in a car accident, so they had to put me in a Curry Cup game the next day. So they had no option. So luckily I survived. Then a season later, it was Super Rugby, I think 2008. Then Billy Ruiz broke his ankle in a match in Samoa, I think. And then he had to fly back for a Super Rugby game. So he couldn't. So I got my first Super Rugby game. So you need a fall and then you need to survive. But refereeing takes a bit of time in the cockpit to genuinely settle.
Yeah, there's one ref in particular I'm thinking of. I'm not going to mention name here, but sometimes the pressure is also too much for certain refs as well. I mean, we're all human. So, and there's one ref that was coming through, very promising young ref, and then obviously had some personal problems that also took him out of the game as well. My question is though, they say, I was going to ask you, you don't know exactly where you're going to be involved, but they say all failed refs become TMOs. That's the joke, at least. Will we see you as the TMO?
Yes, the Marius Jonker's case, that's really true. I'd love him to hear this. He's an exceptional guy. Exceptional knowledge of rugby and a good guy for a refereeing group. But I'm not going to be a TMO. I'm done. I always said, the day I'm done. And what I'll do is I'll be in the background. I'm happy to coach. I'm happy to help, but my days are done. If I become a TMO now, then it defeats the purpose. Then I can still referee. So I want to be more home, more, and I want to spend more time with my family. I want to be more involved in my business. So TMO means 40 weekends away from home again in a year. So that defies the purpose of what I'm trying to achieve. But I tell you what, it's probably that the refereeing is tough. They always say scrum refereeing is tough. I think with the likes of the Mike Krons and Don Hemans that's helping and coaching referees, it's become a bit more clear to us and the teams what we need to referee. The toughest part to referee is the maul. Why not maul? Because it's got so many moving parts. Mm. It's not. There's 16 people in there. And 16 people means 32 feet. And it means either of those feet can be tripped. It's just so many moving parts up there and down here. But even that is not as tough as TMOing. TMOing is so tough because you could sit there for 60 minutes, 65 minutes, and suddenly there's a spike of high impact incidents, and you have to be in a good feel with the game. What does the game need now? Take Tom Foley, for instance, in the World Cup final. He cancelled the try. Everybody can see the knock. But I suspect it's probably the losing team then charged him with World Rugby for going outside the protocol. So did we expect him to close his eyes and not see that knock on? Which is about 3 seconds out of protocol and then let the wrong result happen. So he did what everybody saw live. He fixed it and now it's 3 seconds or 2 seconds out of protocol. And now he ran the risk of being dropped for the next window because of that. And he did the right thing, but not the right protocol thing. So they've got, I'd say TMO's got the toughest job at the moment in rugby.
Yeah.
You do know at some point, though, you're going to probably end up, I know you said you want to spend time at home, but you're probably going to end up in the Super Sports studios next to a screen and some moving parts and pointing to things that may or may not have happened.
Maybe I can have a crack at some of the coaches who's given me stick in the media in the last few years.
Exactly.
And point out where their teams have come up short. No, look, even if that's an option where I can make a contribution to rugby and maybe inform public better, maybe that's something we can explore. But like I said, I'm going to give it a few months and let's see. I've had a few chats with a few different teams or SA Rugby and Bullet Rugby. So there's a few things that we're considering, but I'm just going to give it a bit of time and just get clarity in my mind. What's the best thing for now?
Yeah, I've got one more question or one more rugby-related question to ask you. And I suppose it's one of those questions that, you know, you would probably get asked in a bar, whether you're in Paris or whether you're in London or Edinburgh or wherever. But if there was a law that you could change and make rugby better, what would it be?
Yeah, well, we've considered when, and we constantly, when we sit in our workshops, we try and work out which of these laws will improve the game. And when you change the laws, you don't want to change the fabric of the essence of rugby, because rugby is a game for all shapes and sizes. So if you take away the scrum and the scrum power, you take away, you know, the oxen chairs, and you take away the training on carnage out of the game, you'll change the game completely. Those are also the guys that they may have the scrum strength, but they are also the guys where the outside backs maybe later in the game can get, you know, space around them when they tire down and et cetera. So I'm not one of those who says the scrum is a big problem. I think coaching the scrum is a big problem, because they expect referees to fix the scrum in 80 minutes, which I've been trying for a three-month pre-season. So I think if coaches take that responsibility. So a lot of the law stuff can be fixed by coaches to coach and positively in terms of the laws. However, I also understand that if, let's say, for instance, Rassi had a problem and the last before the final and he didn't have a good enough loosey, then they will have to coach tricks to survive this game. You know, so you also have to then do something, because you're not just going to roll over and accept a loss. So I do understand that side of the coin, but I don't think it's scrum. A lot of people feel maul is the problem. I don't think that's it. It's part of rugby. I think the big thing for
is
me
is the
maul
fair as it is.
If you listen to the coaches, so if you listen to the attacking and defending coaches, if it's set up properly, then it's fair, because you just need to, when they come down, you need direct access to the guy that catches the ball. Then you can hit him backwards, or you can sack him and tackle him, and then you have a chance to stop that. If they are allowed to shift that ball behind another wall and that sort of thing, then it becomes really hard and they get momentum, and then it leads to either tries or yellow cards, because it's cynically dropped, perceived as cynically dropped or taken down. So yeah, so the big thing with mauls is, first things first, you got to set it up properly. And that's you would have seen the referees attempt to do a lot of obstruction penalties at setup. Ball comes down and back lift in the back, they try and fix that that setup so it's fair. So I've thought about it. Maybe if there's a law that halfbacks are not allowed to talk, maybe that's a great
idea. Now you're going to get that right. So.
Okay, that's one you've lost.
But, you know, I think for me, I like these laws where we create space. So I don't know if everybody understands the 50-22 law, why it's there. It means that if teams defend with their wings up, so they leave less space at the front, then teams can kick in there and get the ball back. So yeah, it's risk and reward. Otherwise, they drop their wings and they hang back for the ball, then there's space to pass and play in there. So all those 50-22 laws are designed to create space. So for me, the one law that I would love, and I think it will have an immediate impact on the game, it's not one that people at home would probably perceive as much, but in the kicking game, when they kick downtown, like France did with their fullbacks, when they do the long kick, and the players in front just stand there. They hold their ground, and Dupont then runs forward and he goes and parks 10 meters away from the receiver. Those guys obviously take away, because the guy that catches it, if he runs 5 meters or he passes it, all those blokes outside of 10 meters are onside. So they eat up 40 meters of the pitch. So for me, the one that I immediately fix, if someone behind you kicked, you have to retire to him until he's run past you. That'll open up space for Kirkley Aronson, for Cheslin Colby, whoever we've got, the Chalans and the guys that got the fancy seat, Damien Willemsen. Immediately those guys would have, when they look up, there'll be space, they can play towards it, and then people can play off them as you target forwards and so on. I think that'll have immediate impact. But at test level, the guys are so well-conditioned and so smart around these things. They just kick down long, trap the team there, and wall up, and then they have to kick back. So that then becomes a ding-dong or eyeball, and we create a contestable in the air. So I think if we can open up that 30, 40 meters for the guys with the good feet and the speed to build up steam there and play off each other, I think we will have a lot more momentum on the attack side and a lot less kicking, because it'll be high risk to kick in those space into those guys' throats. So that's one thing I think I would immediately change, is open up that space on the field.
I would say for me, it'd be the caterpillar rucks. They're the ugliest looking things on the rugby field, to be very honest. So, but I know why teams do that.
So. You just got to remember, guys like myself and Wayne is 40 plus, so we need some place to rest. So that Caterpillar Rocks gave us a good break to catch our breath.
Yeah, obviously, this as I told you before you came on, this is also a bit of a wine podcast. So now we're going to ask you to dish some dirt. I'm not going to ask you just for your preference when you open a bottle or whatever you if you're being you from Bloemfontein, so it might be that other wine, the Brandewine. But if you're what's your preference and maybe dish some dirt about who's the biggest wine drinker amongst you?
Who's the thirstiest?
Oh gee, I tell you what, that Wayne Barnes has got hollow legs, man. He can drink a wine. And he's an all-rounder. It doesn't matter if it's red or it's a white or a rosé. He'll drink them all as long as you keep pouring. Wayne likes fine dinners and fine wines, so it's always a good treat when he books a dinner in Paris. You always know it's an expensive dinner, but it's going to be good. So I'd say Wayne, but over time, obviously, he's built up the experience and the capacity to drink a lot of wine. But a good, very good company as well over the wines. Myself, I'm not too fussy. In the winter, obviously, in the Free State, you'll prefer a red in front of a bonfire or a kachel. So I would love to have a Lavenir single block Pinotage. That is my absolute favorite. I always go and visit them. It's one of the it's a boutique wine. So that'll be in the winter, be my favorite. And then in the summer, in the Free State, red wine tastes like lava if you drink it during the day, during January and February. So I prefer something that you can chill down and even, you know, people frown upon it. But in the Free State, you have your Chenin Blanc, your Sauvignon Blanc with a block of ice, you know, just to chill it down. And again, Lavenir's got fantastic wines, and I often go and visit them. So that's my preference. I'll definitely, if I have a chance, Lavenir, go visit them. It's just outside of Stellenbosch.
It's good I didn't ask him who can't handle their wine, eh, Adrian?
Yeah, he went straight for, you know, for the top of the tree, which is, I suppose, understandable. But we'll take what we can get.
Well, I suppose if I wanted to be a bit flippant, I could say if you look at some of the guys' refing decisions, we can tell who. No, let's not go there.
Some of us, it looks like some of us have wine in the change room, doesn't it?
Well, no, I would say some of the French maybe, but not all of you guys. Anyway. Yeah, okay, thanks for your time, man. It's been great. I think we could probably speak for hours though, and hopefully we're going to get you on again at some point. You can come educate us a bit on some rugby matters. Thanks for joining us and enjoy retirement. And I hope your family doesn't get too tired of you too quickly.
Yeah, for now, I think the girls appreciate me being home, but we'll see how it goes. And then I'll start a new hobby, maybe start playing paddle or something. just get out of home.
Yeah, this was wonderful. Thanks so much. Thanks for taking the time.
Anytime, nice. And thanks for your support through the years. I appreciate it.
And we must tag Wayne Barnes on that wine question, eh? And Marius Jonker. I'm sure I remember Marius as well.
Yeah, now there's somebody who loves his red wine.
Yeah, he loves the red wine.
Anyway, we'll see. We'll be back next week. Thanks for joining us, Jaco. And that's been To The Last Drop. We'll chat to you guys next week.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.